Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Casa Connection podcast, where we discuss a plethora of issues within the world of foster care here at Casa of Somerset, Hunterdon, and Warren Counties, better known as Casa Shaw. We have a great episode for you this week. In fact, we have one of our Casa volunteers, one of our longtime Casa volunteers, Mrs. Mary Grossman. How you doing, Mary?
Hi, I'm good. Thanks, Jeff.
It is really great to have you here because we wanted to talk about your experience being a CASA volunteer and ultimately at the end of the day, what CASA means to our community and to the foster children that we serve on a daily basis. And I guess if we can go back to kind of the beginning, you know, you recently did a video for us that we have on our YouTube channel, just to let everybody know. You can search out CASA Shaw on YouTube and find Mary's awesome video there. But again, going back to the beginning of where you made that decision that you wanted to become a CASA volunteer to serve foster youth, can you kind of take us through that, Mary?
Well, it started, you know, I got to the point in my life where my kids were out of the house.
Yep.
They're grown up.
Yep.
They no longer needed me
right.
so much. And I was looking for something to do, some sort of volunteer work. And a friend of mine who's an attorney said, printed out all the stuff about CASA. She knew about the program. She said, I think you'd be great at this.
Yeah.
And I, as I told you before, I was like, no.
For the video. Yeah,
no,
exactly.
No, no, no. I don't think I'd be good at this. Yes.
As many people think, as many people do think, they see what CASA is, what the advocacy is, and they say to themselves, okay, I don't know if I can do this. There's a bit of hesitation, which you did have.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And it's funny because everyone I talk, when I tell them what I do, their first reaction is, I could never do that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yes, you could.
Absolutely.
You absolutely could.
Yeah. So after you said to yourself, okay, I can't do this, you know, you had the papers. I know you put those papers away.
Yes.
For a couple years,
yes.
actually. And you were like, okay, I'm going to keep them here. Maybe I'll revisit them at some time down the road.
Yes. And that's exactly what happened. I came across them again. I still hadn't found out what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
So I started following through and I made the phone calls here and I went for the informational session,
yep.
the mm-hmm. interview, the all of that kind of stuff and passed all that to my surprise.
Yes. Well, it's not the hardest coursework in general. It's intense. It's not hard, I would say.
Right.
You know,
it's
there's some intense stuff when it comes to child advocacy, child development, what happens within families, why children are removed from homes. That stuff can be intense, but at the end of the day, like it's not that it's like really hard work, right?
No.
Okay.
No, right. Not at all. And I have to say, the training was so thorough and I never felt alone in it.
Yeah.
And I never felt like I asked a stupid question or mm-hmm. I should know this
right.
or I should know that. It was amazing.
That's a testament to our CASA staff here.
Absolutely.
It really is. I'm not fluffing my feathers here. This is our case supervisors, our executive director, Tracy Heisler, who is on this podcast every now and again.
Yes.
Folks know her voice. Our case supervisors are incredible in terms of the training. Our volunteer trainer, Karen, as well. Just an amazing staff here that's able to walk everybody through it.
Yes. And a little bit on the side.
Yeah.
That there's never been a time that I have had to call here because I have a question. And if my supervisor's not available, Tracy always answers the phone or someone else.
Yeah.
There's always the support.
It's a team effort.
Yeah.
It's
You're
a team
never
effort
alone
for sure.
in it.
Yeah.
Which is good to know.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, getting back on track, well, okay. We're talking about that period of time then where you got the paperwork out. You got the paperwork out after a couple of years. You're looking at it and you're saying, you know what? I think I may want to embark on this road. You go through the training. It was intense. Wasn't necessarily hard. And then you get your first case, right? You
yes.
get your first case and there's a little bit of trepidation there, correct?
A lot.
Yeah. Okay.
I was actually in uh-huh. Boston and I brought all of my, I had huge notebooks.
Yeah.
Because I had three kids and each one had its own separate thing.
Okay.
And I was reading through them and I was terrified.
Yeah.
I thought, I can't do this. So I decided to go with the youngest kid first. I
yes.
thought that would be the easiest.
Right.
And honestly, the resource parent of the youngest child in that case had been doing it for so long. She walked me through a lot of it.
Yeah.
She said, come over, I'll fill you in.
Yes. Resource parent can be a resource.
Yes, yes. Absolutely.
Yes.
And so that's when it started to be Okay.
You're like, I'm moving along here, and I think I'm able to do this. But then you had a light switch moment.
In some ways, it was terrifying.
Yeah.
Because I knew I was committed at this time to this one particular child.
Yeah.
Who, as I told you, they had said his plan was independent living.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
he was so alone.
Yeah.
And he was so angry and mm-hmm. he was so tired. He was just frustrated. And
he was a teenager. I don't want to say how old he was just based yes. on confidentiality and stuff.
Yes.
But he was a teenager saying that you were going to end up having to live on your own.
Yeah. A young yeah. teenager.
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And that he was going to have to live on his own. And I just looked at this kid and I thought, maybe I can do this,
yeah.
but I am going to give it everything I've got.
Right.
And
because you saw the situation, you were like, this can't be right.
This can't happen. No.
How does something like this happen where a young teenager is basically going to be living on their own, being responsible for themselves? And I think that was kind of that light switch moment for you where you were like, okay, I'm going to do this right now. I'm going to do this and I am going to advocate for this child because they need somebody in their corner.
Yes. And they need someone to show up
yeah.
constantly. And so when I said I'd be there, I was there.
Yep.
And he was a great kid. We had such a strong connection. By the end of the case, I was visiting him every week, just once a month.
Nice.
Because he was so alone.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he gave me the confidence to go forward as a CASA.
Right.
You know, he said to me once, why are you doing this?
Yeah.
How much do you make?
Uh-huh.
And I said, I don't get paid.
Right.
And it's funny because his mom, who I had been in contact with a lot, she liked me. So she kind of told him she's okay.
Yeah.
And then she told me, I don't know if this is anything, but ask him about God.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so the next time I was there and he asked me why I'm doing it. And I said, you know, do you believe in God?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I do. And I said, well, so do I. And I think that's why, you know, that this is what I'm meant to do is
yeah.
I'm meant to help
Absolutely.
Children.
Absolutely.
And he accepted it.
And it's a great story because it shows connectivity, connection. And that's what foster youth at the end of the day really need, that one stable adult. That's what
yes.
CASA is.
Yes.
That's what CASA is. And as we're moving along in the conversation here, how have you seen, if there's any other examples, perhaps, and again, with regard to confidentiality and stuff, mm-hmm. how have you seen the value of CASA up close and personal, not just with that first particular case you had, perhaps in other cases, or with regard to what we do here in the office and how we operate? Like, how have you seen the value of CASA up close and personal?
I've seen it so many areas. You know, I've seen it in general way. In that first case, there was also a younger sibling,
mm-hmm.
a boy who was younger, obviously. And he was so lonely. And I just started playing basketball with him.
Yeah.
And just that little thing of showing up, he
yeah.
would, you know, I'd pull up and he'd be waiting at the window. Like with the basketball in his
hand.
Because
he wanted to dribble the ball and shoot some
yes.
hoops with you.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know,
because he had nobody to do that with.
No one.
Yeah.
And building that type of relationship with him, then I was able to bring it into the other areas. When he'd see me at his school, you know,
yeah.
it would meant something.
Right.
When, you know, the therapist, whoever was coming to the house and, you know, I'd say, would you like me to come? And he'd say yes. And then there was just always that connection that this person, like a parent almost,
yeah.
is showing up for me when I need them.
Absolutely. Yeah.
He actually, too, he would call me. And he called me one Christmas Eve.
Okay.
Crying and saying, I have to get out of here. I have to get out of here. And I was like, you can't. But I was able to, I mean, I left my family
yeah.
on Christmas Eve. Like, I'll be back.
Yeah, right, right.
And
that's dedication.
I have a phone call yes. to take. And I spent about an hour on the phone with him.
Yeah.
And by the end, he was laughing. And, mm-hmm. you know, and I felt heartbroken, but
yeah.
okay.
Right.
You know, and
yeah.
So there's those types of connections that then once I build the connection with the child, and not all of them, obviously,
right.
some kids don't want anything to do with it.
Yeah.
Then I'm able to build it in the other areas of their lives.
And it's interesting how you mentioned that connectivity and how that relates to a case, but in terms of the longevity of a case as well, because you've had a case that went on for a significant period of time where it led to an adoption. Now, of course, again, because of confidentiality, we really can't get into too much of the details. But at the end of the day, it was because of your advocacy. It was because of CASA. At the end of the day, that this child was able to be adopted and to have a forever home where they felt safe. Mm-hmm. They were safe. And where they were able to thrive. And that's what we want. That's what we want for foster youth, you know, when it's all said and done. Can you talk to us maybe a little bit about that experience?
Yes. And I will say, since after our video, the little girl called me on her way to college to check into her dorm.
Oh, that's
to tell
great.
Me. So
that is great.
So excited.
That's great.
As we talked a little bit about in this case, the woman who adopted was not in... She wasn't a resource parent. She was a family member, and she stepped up because she was a family member. And she had never had DCPMP in her life.
Yeah.
She didn't know how that worked, anything about it. And like, as I told you before, she had six biological children of her own.
Right.
So she really got frustrated a lot. Mm-hmm. So as CASA during that time where they were, you know, coming in and saying, you've got to change that doorknob and you have to change, you know, there were all these things that were being asked of her.
Yeah.
I was able to sit with her and be there through all of it.
You were the buffer.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And saying, you know, never leaving them alone with it was,
right.
And it was what they asked for. Yeah. Because there got to be times where she said, I'm going to have her removed. If mm-hmm. this keeps going, I'm not, no.
Exactly.
We can do this.
Right.
So that was really, in that case, it was just about the support, the phone calls, following up on DCPMP on things that she had requested, helping get that done.
Right.
I developed a really close relationship with the attorney in the case, and we worked on several cases together, which was really, really helpful, really amazing. And I felt like we had a great team with CASA.
Yeah.
My supervisor at the time was amazing. I mean, they all are here.
Right.
Yes. But when I was working with Krista, the one that I was working with then, she always had my back. Mm-hmm. You know, I would call her sometimes 10 times a day and say, well, what about this?
Right.
What about this?
Right.
What about... And the other thing that CASA really helped me with was I had to learn that not everything was urgent. I thought had to be taken care of immediately, other people may not think it had to be taken care of immediately. So CASA really helped me navigate
those roads. There's a
patience.
Yeah, there's a patience aspect to this type of advocacy, for sure. And I think what you're also talking about, too, in this entire conversation that we're having, Mary, it's about relationships. It's about the establishment of a relationship with many different players. When you're talking about the attorney, you know, whether it's the resource parent, the biological parent, the child itself, inevitably everything we do is about relationships. And it's very heartwarming to hear these type of stories where there is success at the end of the day. Success because one adult provided stability for a child who was removed from their home by no fault of their own. And I think there's something to be said for that relationships really do matter. It seems like a simple principle and value. It seems like it's very simple, but it's not. At times, relationships matter.
They do. And I try really, what I found, and this took me a while to learn, is I use the, I'm court appointed, so everyone that comes in contact with this child needs to speak to me.
Right.
You know, so, but I, at the beginning of every school year, I make an effort to go out, to meet the teachers, to sit down with them, to explain what CASA is and what we do.
Right.
And how important it is that, you know, I stay in touch with them so I know how they're doing in school. I know that they're showing up. I know that they're clean or have lunch, whatever it is. So I built that relationship. And then, you know, with the different agencies, DCPMP, CMO, all of them, therapists, to be able to pick up the phone and just say, hey, just checking in, where I become a part of the team.
Yes.
And that's what I really feel like, that I'm just one member of a team behind this child, but I'm the member that's not going to change.
Yeah. I think that is such a great way to really, really describe what we are here at CASA. It's a team. It's a team effort on behalf of children who do not have a voice at the end of the day. And I guess as we kind of close things out here, Mary, I'm wondering, as you have these experiences as a CASA volunteer, as you have met with various children on various cases, various parents, resource parents, attorneys, everybody involved, what's been the most rewarding part of this experience for you? Is there a top of the mountain most rewarding part for you, or is there a lot of different stuff that kind of just comes together? I know, tough question.
Yeah, there's definitely adoption days.
Yeah.
Doesn't get much better than that.
Right.
I do stay in touch with a lot of the families that, you know, the children are in their forever homes.
Yeah.
And I do stay in touch. I get first day of school pictures.
Nice.
And that kind of stuff,
nice.
Which always, that's always a high moment.
Yeah.
You know, and I do feel that I have that chance, you know. I have a case right now where a child was just moved from one place to another and last week, and I've seen her three times since then because I want her to know,
wow.
You know, I'm here.
Yeah.
I'm not going anywhere.
Right.
And the other part that I think is really important is I don't talk about the case with them.
Yeah.
It's not about whatever is going on or,
it's just showing
or
up.
You did or, yeah. or anyone else did.
You're showing up.
Yeah. It's just being with you. In this moment.
And, absolutely.
And, you know, and I show up everywhere.
Yeah.
They're probably sick of me, but I show up at school and games and soccer practice, wherever they are, I am.
And that's fantastic. That's what advocacy is all about in the end. It's one of the reasons why we wanted to have you on the CASA Connection podcast to tell your story and to share what you have done, who you are as an individual, and to just show people and let people hear about how the manifestation of relationships with children and adults really can be a beautiful thing. So, Mary,
amazing.
Thank you so much
thank
for joining
you.
Us, telling your story. It was great, great talking to you. Who knows? Maybe we'll talk at some point down the road.
Oh, I'd love it.
All right. Well, folks, we hope you enjoyed this CASA Connection podcast episode. If you are part of our network, you know, be sure to check out our website. We've got a lot of different things going on. We have a book club here that is run by one of our great CASA staff members, Karen Cassano. And if you want to get in touch with Karen, please feel free to reach out to us. CASASHAW.org is our website. We are on Instagram at CASA_Shaw. We'd love a follow there. And we are on Facebook. Search us out there, facebook.com/CASASHAW, and give our page a like and a follow. So with that being said, folks, you all take care, and we will catch you on the next CASA Connection podcast.